Hey, and welcome to the OT for Life podcast. Today, I'm delighted to bring on a good friend of mine and certified occupational therapy assistant, TJ Lee. In our chat, we discuss the accident that caused an incomplete spinal cord injury and left TJ with a less than 5% chance of ever walking again. TJ shares his journey from accident to recovery, how his experience has impacted him as a practitioner, and how that's influenced him towards his various interests within the field of OT. Through his work as an OT assistant, advocating for disability awareness through his blog, and being an adaptive athlete who competes in obstacle course races throughout the country, TJ truly lives life to the fullest, one day at a time, and works to instill that same mindset for all of his clients.
If you're interested in occupational therapy, this is the place for you. This show aims to explore our profession by sharing who we are and what we do. Because for us, occupational therapy is more than just a job. Hi, I'm Sarah. Welcome to OT for Life.
Welcome to the show today, TJ. How is it going?
Good, good. Today's actually rest day because I'll be flying out tomorrow for an event in Canada called the Red Bull 400.
What? Tomorrow?
Yeah. And then the event's on Saturday morning up in Whistler, Canada.
Okay. What does that entail?
Running up a mountain where usually the people go down the ski ramp. So the Olympic high jump.
Uh-huh.
We go up.
So something that you're supposed to go down on, you actually turn around and go up.
Yes. For fun that I paid for and put my body through, but I kind of do that a lot.
I feel like it's like when I'm working with kids and it's always like, okay, like let's go down the slide, and then I'm like, okay, turn around, let's go back up the slide.
I choose to. So
wow, I have like so many questions about that. I'm like, okay, a ski jump is no joke. That's not like a little hill. That is massive.
Yes, very massive. I think the last time I did 2 years ago, it took me about an hour, but there was conditions that I didn't count for were outside of California. When there says there's a certain percentage of rain, it will rain. Not like LA where like, oh, that's 30%. It's like, that's not rain. So it was raining. So it was more slipperier than I trained for. Also, I slipped and bruised my rib. Ooh. Right before we went on. So I got in the zone. I started deep breathing to calm myself down. And my teammates are like, oh, look at him. He's in the zone. He's going to get ready. And I couldn't catch my breath to tell him no. But I was like, it was right before we went on. So we did it. So I'm trying to best my time under an hour. That would be nice.
An hour. And you said that there's running involved as well. So it's not, do you start off with this hill or have you already done something else before you get there?
The first 100 meter is nice and flat. Then the second 100 meters to about the third 100 meters, it goes about almost vertical, I would say. And then it kind of tapers off and it goes back vertical again on the last 400.
Wow. And is there like a netting or something? Like, what does it actually look like?
Well, the one I did 2 years ago in Park City, they did have netting because they practice jumps during the summer as well. But from what I saw on the course for Whistler, Canada, it was more just regular grass. So it'll be interesting. And also it's going to rain. It's been raining the past couple of days, like I guess soft rain. So it's going to be nice and squishy as well. So it's going to be a nice, dirty time.
Yeah. So, it almost just kind of sounds like almost like mountain climbing in a sense, where when you're going straight up, like you're literally climbing like hands and feet and like pulling yourself up in any which way that you possibly can.
That is exactly it. So my training has been a lot of crawling on my feet, doing a lot of floor work, which I've tried not to be on the floor, but for this, I had to train on the floor. So a lot of like fall recovery, trying to just be up on all fours.
I was going to say, like, how else do you train for something like this? Because it's not like there are ski jumps all over the place, especially in California.
Yeah, even with I try to read blogs about it or other posts of how people train, and there's no one way of training. It's just be as prepared as can be, doing weight training, stairs, a lot of legs, but there's still the crawling aspect. and the elevation, which this one isn't too high. It's about 2,000 feet above. I think Park City was about 7,000 to 8,000 feet, so the breathing was much harder.
Yeah, I can only imagine, because I was just in Peru, and I happened to be between like 9,000 to 11,000. I got up to 14,000 at one point, and literally going up the like tiniest of hills, I'd get to the top and I'd be like,
"Wow,
whew, okay, I'm breathing hard now."
Did you have any oxygen on you or anything?
No. You just go slow and just kind of take your time and try to acclimate as best as possible. I mean, I wasn't doing anything super physically intense. Like, I wasn't hiking. It just, the city that I was in happened to be at, I think it's 9,000 feet somewhere.
Okay, so you're able to acclimate and kind of just do it. Not like me, where I just fly in, fly out, just give my body some torture.
Yeah, for fun.
For fun. Well, it's just one of the things I've been doing Spartan races, Rugged Maniacs, or they could just call it obstacle course racing. So kind of, which is very funny. I feel very OT while I do it. It's like when I chase my kids and stuff, we get to get dirty. We pay to get dirty and roll around the mud, crawl on netting, do all the fun stuff we used to do as kids.
Yeah, I haven't done like a Spartan race or what you call it?
Yeah.
Rugged mm-hmm. Maniac. I've done like the mud runs, and I've done a couple of those before. So I'm guessing pretty similar, but you're climbing over things and you're jumping into cold water and like crawling under the ropes and all that kind
yes.
of stuff.
Yes. And it's fun. It's kind of, it is hard work, but it's, when I look, I keep looking back at it, it's fun. Or when I'm in it, it's like, oh, it's fun. It's like one step at a time, just kind of do it. And also I try to take as many like athletic workshops around, either like when there's like adaptive workshops through Angel City Sports, or like my friends, I have a lot of PT friends that they host free clinics. I try to go and they'll tell me what's wrong, or your balance is bad. It's like, I know, just get, like, I'm here to find out what work, like what exercise you can give me. Like the whole assessing stuff. And I was like, oh, I get it. All right, let's figure it out. So let's get me better.
Right. Well, and I feel like you said that when you're doing it, you feel like it's like when you're working with the kids. But I also think like when you're doing those types of like really physically challenging activities, you're also doing your own activity analysis of like, how's going to be the best way to do it, and how to could like conserve your energy on certain tasks or challenges, and like the ones that are going to be harder, and like you're constantly kind of like monitoring and adjusting based on whatever kind of challenge you have presented in front of you.
Oh yeah, totally. That it the whole time it's more mental in that sense, where I gotta keep troubleshooting. If this didn't work, okay, let's try this. Okay, that didn't work, try this. And then I also have teammates with me that have really good supportive teammates, friends. That like, oh, that didn't work, let me help you out. And then so one of my teammates that I'm going up there with, he's done it with me a handful of times, and then my girlfriend's done two with me, and then my new roommate, this is his first time. So there's like I have a nice combination of this will work somehow.
you'll make it work.
Yeah.
You're an OT. You'll make it work. So I feel like we should rewind a little bit and talk about kind of that pivotal moment, that thing that happened a couple years ago that I feel like really kind of has defined your path into becoming a certified occupational therapy assistant and really kind of who you are to this day.
So my accident was in 2003. Before that, I just graduated high school, was supposed to start at Cal State LA, I think. I was fairly active. I was in band, played volleyball, mountain biking, kind of just run-of-the-mill basketball, just not the most physically fit, but still trying hard and having fun. And then 2003, September 13th, I got in a car accident, or I broke my C4 and C5. A friend fell asleep at the wheel, and I don't remember much, just hearing the car, and my friends are like, oh no, and then I just woke up and I couldn't move. So the car rolled over, and I blacked out. I woke up. I wanted to make sure everyone else was okay. One of my ideas to go on this road trip to go to San Francisco and back. And it was weird because it was very, like, the timing was really good. I guess the timing was good in the accident sense, where a trucker was going by and then he was able to see what happened and he called in for help. We got airlifted to the hospital in Kern County.
So the trucker was behind you?
He was in front of me, but he saw just the headlights.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. So it was really weird that all that happened, because when they airlifted me into the hospital, there was a doctor that was staying overtime. That wasn't his normal schedule, but he was just there at the moment. And he was specialized in motor vehicle accidents and spinal cords. So everything got really rushed. During that whole time, I was still trying to figure out what happened, what's going on. My friends are okay. The biggest part was my mom's going to kill me. I just crashed my car. And I didn't tell her I was going to go on this long road trip. What's going to happen? Which was funny, because I think I was talking out loud at the same time. And she was there. And she's like, oh, I'm here. I hear everything. Oh. They told me everything. I was like, oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, right.
At that point, she didn't know what to expect, because she just heard that was an accident. So she thought I broke an arm, a leg, something smaller, mm-hmm. I guess. To find out that I'm in a neck collar, I couldn't move anything, and I was just I was just blood cuts all over the place. So that's what I remember. Into the hospital, and I woke up from the surgery that happened, and I just remember a tube being down my throat. I couldn't move, and I just wanted to know what was going on. No, it was just in a black room. I could hear all the instruments going on inside. And the only thing I knew, I was trying to speak up, but my voice, I couldn't talk with the tube down my throat, and I just had no air in my system. So I don't know if it's the smartest thing now that I look back. I started chewing on the air tube, slowly, a little bit. And eventually I got to a point where I just closed down the air hose, and then the machine started flatlining. And then someone came in, I was like, hey, what's going on? I could breathe, or I thought I could breathe at the time. Take this tube out. So they took it out. And then that's when my friends and my mom, my brother, they were in the waiting room. They saw that I was awake. They all came in at that point. And I still didn't know what happened. I don't know anything. The doctors talked to all of them, so they all knew. They're just really sad. And I was like, come closer. What's going on? I can't talk really loud.
And at this point, you couldn't remember anything about the car.
I just know that we're coming back, and I just heard it roll over.
Okay.
And then just on and off of consciousness of, there's a lot of dust. I saw a piece of my car. All of a sudden, there's someone asking me my information. So I was my name, my birthday. Do you have any allergies? I don't know why that stood out to me. You have allergies? I'm allergic to cats, which is the last thing. Yeah. I was okay, cool. I think he just was trying to talk to me. He's stay. I was awake. So that was all the stuff that happened night one. And then I finally got some sleep. They once stabled me off. And when I was awake finally, all the drugs ran through me. I think I wanted to know a lot what was going on. So I asked a lot of questions during that time. And even a lot of questions that my mom didn't really think of. Just what's this? So the doctor came in my room. It's you have spinal cord injury. Oh, you have 2% chance of anything coming back from your neck down. And I was like, okay.
2%.
Yes, 2%. They were very blunt. And my mom started crying. I was like, oh, okay.
Did that even register to you? Or were you just kind of yeah, whatever. Okay, doctor. Or was it whoa, hold on. What did you think at that moment?
At that time, it didn't really register, because they were going over everything. I don't remember what day it was, second day, 30. But that was when I was conscious, or I was under my own power. And there was just a bombardment of just information going on. It was oh, you got spinal cord injury, 2% chance of walking. Right now, your head's in a brace because we're trying to keep it stabilized. And you got cuts all over. We'll clean you up. There's so much going on. It was overwhelming until I talk about it. And it's the 2%, cool. But from that point on, it's just for therapy-wise, I feel like everything was just such a rush. There was just nonstop, something to do, something going on, where I've had my lungs collapse. I had pressure sores the size of a quarter. I've broken out because all of a sudden my body was resetting and I was allergic to plastics. I had like MRSI. What else? I caught a cold. Yeah, I've had the full gamut of anything that could happen in a hospital, like happen to me, and that wasn't even with rehab.
This is all before that.
This is all like just like health condition wise. The rehab part was the fun part that I liked.
And also, like, you were 18 at this point.
Yes.
You probably had some medical knowledge, but not to the level that you have today. So you're young and you're probably just trying to like process everything that's going on in your life at that moment.
Yeah, it's just the inpatient care or inpatient stay. It's just so fast that like it's so hard to register everything. Like even when I treat my clients, I make sure like any questions that they ask, because it's so like they're just trying to kind of push you out. I mean, back then, what was that, more than 10 years ago, the stay was longer because I was in Rancho for about 6 months, which probably you can't even do that now. But I kept improving little by little. So I had the old PT, speech, OT. They had some psych for a little bit too, because the fact that I wasn't I processed it, but I was like, okay, that's cool. Let's get on. Let's keep going forward. Like, there's no need to like, let's talk about that. Let's just keep going forward. So they kind of thought I've injured my brain, or like if they just, I remember just the psychiatrist coming in all the time and asking me if I was okay. I'm like, yeah, I'm good. I'm like, good as I can be. And they're like, okay, we'll check up on you again.
Like almost like you didn't understand what was going on, but you were just like, let's move on. Like, let's get to the next thing. And they took it as like, maybe he doesn't understand like the full scope of everything that's happened.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what was going on. Cause I even told my mom, I was like, she probably thinks I'm like crazy, right? Like I'll try to explain what's going on and how I feel to make sure like she knows I'm here. I'm good. Brain's good. It's just the physical part.
That's one of the interesting and also can be kind of scary parts of like a brain injury, is because if you don't have any sort of physical symptoms, it's really hard to know what's going on because it happened inside of your brain. And so I can see why people would be worried about that, because they're like, we don't know exactly what happened. And even just going through trauma, like let alone some sort of like physical impact, just the trauma of the situation. So I can see where the doctors and your mom and your friends and everyone would be worried and really kind of paying attention to how you're processing things and kind of how your brain is operating at this point. And you're sitting there like, guys, I'm good. The brain's good. Like, let's work on some of these other things that need some attention here.
Actually, the way you explained it, I totally get it now. I get it. I didn't think of it that point. It's funny because I still keep like, I see new point of views and like, huh, I didn't think of it like that. It probably seemed like I was a little loopy because the whole time, there wasn't any sad moments I had in the hospital, I remember. I was always just ready to do the next therapy session, this, that. Like, I did anything and everything to keep me busy, to try to just keep pushing myself. That's where kind of my whole blog with the one day at a time came. Just trying to make one day better than the next. And even if it was, like, getting movement in my finger, all of a sudden I have pain, that was, like, moving forward for me.
And that sounds so interesting for you to say that, because most people would be like, well, pain, you don't want to have pain. But if you're not feeling anything, to then all of a sudden feeling pain, you have a feeling, you have that feeling again.
And as it came for me, it was like numbing, just like a numbing all day and night. And then eventually got to pain, and I was like, oh, okay. And after pain, it was the whole hot and cold. And it kind of came in steps. So weird. It's kind of like the stuff we learned during OT school. I was like, oh, it does come in like that. And then anytime something would come in, I would try to, I guess, self-test myself. I mean, there's only like therapy is only like a couple hours of a day. So the rest of the time, I'm just in my room, not being able to move. So once the hot and cold came in, I would just put my hands under the sink when it's really hot and cold. And then trying to see if it's, okay, that's cold. Or put on the hot water. I see the steam. That's hot. And then all of a sudden, the hot sensation would go up, like really delayed. I was like, okay, cool. Something's there. Even though it was painful, because I couldn't differentiate, a lot of it was just coming as pain. I was like, oh, as long as I have it, I'm just going to try try to figure it out more. Even when I just had numbing sensation, I would just kind of like hit it like on the side of the table or just like have someone like poke it with something. And a lot of that was going on outside of like therapy, because they probably wouldn't be happy of me trying to burn my hand under hot water, or like poking myself when I had like no skin like sensation. But it was just for like I needed to know, or I was trying to kind of figure things out. So like I feel like a lot of the therapy was just like a lot of information, and when I was in my room, that was when I did most of the therapy.
But I think that's such an important part to highlight, like especially as a therapist and as we're working with our clients, that the real work is done outside of therapy, right? You get the education, you learn about what needs to be done, you'll maybe go through some exercises, some activities, like whatever it is, but the real learning happens in real life and in the 23 hours outside of therapy, or however many hours it is, right? And the fact that you didn't just sit there and wait for your next therapy appointment, you're like, no, all right, this is what I have. This is where I think I can get to. And I'm going to utilize this time that I have to try to push myself to that next step. Regardless if you were pushing yourself maybe in ways that you shouldn't have, or maybe your therapist wouldn't have been as happy with you. But mentality-wise, and that motivation piece was like, I need to do something. I want to get better. And I have this drive to get better. I'm not going to just sit around and wait.
I remember having clashes with my OTs a lot, which is funny that now I'm in like team OT and that thing is like, oh, it's so frustrating. So during that time, I like going to PT, which PT gets all the love most of the time. And then when I look at OT, anytime I have OT session, I was like, oh, great. Use my bad hand to do things. I could use my left hand. Like, no, use your right. Like, get that moving. I was like, oh.
So what do you think it was? Why did you, at that point, why did you enjoy going to PT more rather than OT?
I think it was the way they approached it, and just the fact that I wasn't walking or mobile just to get me moving around, which we're doing the same on both, but I think it was like the nitty-gritties of OT, like the little fine motor movements that I kind of took advantage of. Or yeah, once we lose it, we take advantage of that we had it. That frustrated me a lot, where I like playing games and I was really active with my hands, like building things, taking things apart that I thought I couldn't do. It could have been how open I was, rather than just being like really specific onto everything. Cause I was just like, give me everything and anything. And it was just, they're just going down the list of their usual stuff, and which wasn't my usual things.
Yeah. So it wasn't super meaningful and purposeful for you. It also sounds like, and I'm just kind of basing it off of like being a young guy at that point, that you just wanted to get back to walking. So like, I feel like walking was probably a big goal, and some of these other things that like your OT was working on, you were probably just like, yeah, whatever, like, let me get walking and then we can address this other stuff.
The funny thing, I wasn't really too much about the walking. I just wanted to move, because I was in it for like a month. I was just in one position. That being able to move, that's probably where I got my pressure sore. I just didn't move from my one spot. Like, you're supposed to move side to side. And that once, like, I got the clearance to take a halo off my head, which is, that thing is crazy. Like, one, like, millimeter of movement gave me the biggest headache. But I think just being able to move, because I wasn't really, it wasn't always about the walking. I could have been happy at any stage if I was in the power chair, in the wheelchair. So it was just the movement part, because I was active and always here and there, that just getting me out and about rather than just sitting at a desk to do one thing. I think that was it.
Yeah. Okay. I see what you're saying. It's interesting to hear you kind of talk through it now, like now that we know that you're in the profession of OT. So it's like, I wonder what you didn't like about it back then compared to now.
Mm-hmm. Totally took for granted back then. I was just like, okay. Now I was like, oh, maybe I get it. It's like a light bulb. I'm like, okay, I need the net. It also helps me like, oh, I need to do better whenever I have the chance with a client.
Right. So talk us through a little bit about, so it sounded like you got some pain sensation back. You got temperature back. Like, where and how did your movement and sensation start coming back?
It definitely started at the feet first. And I think that was the year Kill Bill came out. I just remember that scene, wiggle your big toe. And I remember I would just do that for hours at night, just try to move it. And I would just get so focused on that one thing and just try to move it or feel it. Like, oh, I think I felt it. I would call the nurse like at 2 a.m. Like, why aren't you sleeping? He's like, I think my toe moved. Can you touch it? Maybe I could feel it. It's like, no, I think you're overdoing it. I was like, okay. And then eventually one night I was like, I moved it. I know. So I called the nurse again. It's like, hey, like I moved it. They're like, oh, wow, you did move it. Okay, go to sleep. I was like, huh?
I can't sleep now.
You can't tell me to go to sleep. I can feel it. I can move it. And then so it came from like the toe up.
Okay. And was it your left toe?
Mm-hmm, my left toe. Which was funny because everything on my left side came, but my right side didn't. But I was right-handed or semi-ambidextrous, so I had to convert back to my left side. So my left side came in, which when I had that movement, I didn't really think about the right side as well. I just saw the left. I was like, oh, cool. I got that in. But that pain feeling just was throughout the body.
Okay.
So I couldn't really localize it. It was weird.
Interesting, yeah. It wasn't like greater or lesser on one side compared to the other?
Mm-mm. Because even when I was like testing out like with the hot water, like on my hands and my feet, I'm doing it both at the same time that I didn't really differentiate. And then once that sensation came in, it was just everywhere. I'm like, oh, I should have stopped. And then like my spasms kick in. I'm just like, oh, smart. And then try to calm my way back down from it.
Uh-huh. Okay, so you got a little bit of movement in your toe, and then slowly with more therapy and more, it almost is like you were willing yourself, like with your mind of like, okay, the next thing I'm going to get is my ankle, and now we're going to move up to the knee, and like literally telling yourself it's going to happen.
Yeah, a little bit of that, like, okay, let's try it. If not, I would like kind of switch off with hands, like, okay, I could see my hands a little. It's so much closer. Hands. Okay, feet, hands, feet, and it kind of like a combination of the two of my left side more. It was weird.
And then finally, at some point, you were able to sit up?
Yes, be able to sit up. And I would share the info, not with the nurses, but more like the therapists, like the ones that were my regulars, because there was always the people filling in. And they're like, hey, this happened. Can we try this? So like once I got my hands, I'm like, hey, can I try to sit myself up on my hands? And it's always like the first time it went bad, but eventually I try to adapt to it or figure out why it went bad and then kind of work myself with the biggest thing was I was communicating a lot, and I was willing to work, like I was willing to fall flat on my face and it was fine, like this would go. Like they would always be worried, like, oh no, are you okay? I'm like, no, I'm fine, let's keep going, let's get this momentum. So that would, I guess, ultimately kind of push me to what I could do. So I'm like sitting up myself and then holding myself up. Okay, let's move side to side and see how that goes. And start rolling, start reaching for things, and start getting stronger. My legs started getting stronger little by little as well. So I was like, oh, can we try standing up? So they like put me in the like that treadmill thing where they kind of, but it felt like I was just like in a baby crawler.
Uh-huh.
Did that. And then eventually slowly let me have more weight on my body. I was like, oh, cool, let's get into like a walker. And yeah, I think that part happened at like the latter end of my stay, where it was just like nothing and it was just feeling for a long while. And all of a sudden things just came back really fast, which they were surprised about too.
Okay, so this was, I think, because you said it had been like 6 months that you were in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So most of that you had very like none or very little movement, and then what, maybe the last month, the last 2 months, like when did you start to get some sort of movement and sensation?
Yeah, the last 2 months, about the last month where I started really pushing myself outside, like, okay, I figure out this pain's gonna be here, the spasms, I gotta just figure out a way to just deal with it. And then that's when we started pushing more and more and more.
And I think one of the interesting things to note, too, is, I mean, you spent at least 4 months not moving at all, and how quickly, like, the body can kind of atrophy mm-hmm. when there's literally no movement happening. So, like, you were combating so many things to kind of overcome everything that your body had gone through with the accident, but then also just in that recovery piece. as well, right?
Yeah, I lost about 50 pounds.
Holy smokes.
I was a chubby kid. I have pictures to prove it. No one believes me. Like for the first month, it was just puree, soft texture. So like, I don't even know what it was. For me, it just all tasted like mashed potatoes. So I don't prefer mashed potatoes anymore. Applesauce I could do, but it was just like I couldn't do it anymore. And I think that's what caused me to lose a lot more weight too, because I wasn't eating it much. Yeah. They had like the supplement shakes, which they keep saying, if this one tastes good, they all kind of taste bad. Especially when you're 18 and like you're used to like sugary things and just yep. things that taste more.
All you want is like a burger and fries.
Yeah, that's all. I think at one point I just told him, like, can you just go get me some like Panda Express or anything that's nearby, which probably wasn't. Oh, just I'm just like looking back. I was like, I'm not the smartest. I wasn't the smartest patient kid. Like, I was still eating soft foods. And I was like, I just want to eat like fried rice or like some kind of Asian food. And Panda Express, she got me that, and I did okay. I was like,
you made it work.
Yeah, I made it work. So I was like, oh, okay, nothing. The next day, like, nothing's going on. And I was like, all right, can you keep buying me that, Mom? Which I felt bad now. Like, that's a lot of money every day, and then she would eat my food.
I don't know. So she probably doesn't like mashed potatoes anymore either.
No, she still loves mashed potatoes.
Okay, so you spent 6 months in the hospital, and then what? Did you go home from there? Did you have to go to another facility for a little bit? Like, what did it look like after that?
So from there, that my parents recently, they kind of finalized the divorce papers while I was in the hospital. So we had to move out from our house to our apartment. So there was nowhere else left to go then. We were trying to look for a house before I ultimately went out to Fontana, but there was about a month or two we were still in an apartment, and there's nothing we could do. It kind of overstayed my limit. So I went back to the apartments, which was interesting because it was on the second floor. They knew my situation, so they gave me like a loaner wheelchair. That first day back, oh my gosh, I felt so bad for like my mom, my brother. They kind of had to just carry me up the stairs.
Because there was no elevator.
There was no elevator.
No accessible entry.
No, because the place was built way before any of the ADA.
Right.
And so our apartment was really small. They kind of just put me in and like, okay. And that's where I got to cooking and just figuring out, okay, cool. I have more freedom now. I'm back home. I know what works, what doesn't. I could kind of stand up, but not take too many steps. But the walls were like really small, so kind of used it to lean against. And I just kept pushing my body. And all of a sudden, like all my friends knew that I was back. So they just contacted me and said, yeah, come pick me up. If you could carry me down the stairs or wait 20 minutes as I go one by one down the stairs, push myself up and down, go for it. Like my friends, I feel like I have the greatest support, because without them, my recovery wouldn't have happened as fast, I feel like, because I feel like every day I had someone come by at the hospital and they were just all itching for me to come out. So when I got back home, it didn't stop. They're coming over every other day. And so either they come in, but I was like, I didn't want to stay in at that point. I was just like, let's go out. Just wait for me. We'll get down there. We'll make it work. There's at times where we didn't even take a wheelchair like into the car. I was like, I just wanted to be out in the open road, get some nice fresh air. And that it happened like it was like that for a couple of weeks before we got our final move into Fontana. And then my friends were really far. And all of a sudden, it was just back to me and my family and just trying to figure things out. And at the same time, I'm still going back and forth doing my rehab out here in LA, but going to Fontana.
Which is, for people that don't know, I mean, that's hours apart.
Yeah, it's without traffic, but there's never without traffic. It should be 50 minutes. So like, get up early to beat traffic to get to Downey to do my rehab. And at that point, I was like, let me go see some friends. Saw friends and came back like another hour and something drive and I'm just home. So when I'm at home, now that there wasn't the walls close nearby, anything, like it was harder for me to walk around. So I'd have to figure it out. Like the wheelchair didn't fit. So I was like, huh, let's see. That's like, I feel like that's where like a lot of like how my OT brain kind of kicked in. We're like, huh, okay. So if my wheelchair doesn't fit and I can't use my cane because I get tired really quickly. I don't want to fall down. Like maybe an office chair will do. And then so I used the office chairs to kind of just get around the house. And then slowly as I'm getting stronger and stronger, I use my crutches and still doing the rehab, getting stronger.
And when you're saying rehab, OTPT, are you doing speech?
No, just OT and PT. The speech one didn't last too long. After a while, he was like, "You're a bright guy." I'm like, "Thanks, I guess." I was, even they had really, really hard like word puzzles or riddles. But they're like, I think you're there. I'm like, "Thanks."
You're like, "Okay, good." Moving on.
So it's the OTPT. Eventually, the driving back and forth was being too much, and I was getting transferred to a different county of services. So I went from coming out to LA and then had to transfer all my services to out in San Bernardino County. And when that happened, it was like back to square one of the assessments and figuring out, like, it felt like I had to start my whole therapy session or therapy like career all over again, because they had to figure out where my levels are at. And I was like, oh man, that. And I felt like a kid because I was doing CCS, but I was like 18, 19. I was like, oh, this like kid stuff. And so it was about a couple of months of doing therapy. I was like, into my new thing at CCS. I was like, I think I could manage. I feel like I've troubleshooted enough things where at that point in, it was probably getting close to a year of back and forth. And I was like, I think I could manage. And actually, I took myself out of therapy. I just told them, like, I don't think I need services anymore. I could probably just go to the gym or at home with like equipment and then figure it out. And so I kind of discharged myself. Just everything just sounds bad when people hear like, this kid, who is he?
Right. But I mean, again, I think that's like kind of a testament to your will of like, okay, I've gotten to this point. I've learned a lot. I know what they've trained me to do. I think I can handle this on my own. And you probably knew, like, if you ever needed to go back to therapy, that you could. But at that point, you're like, let's try maybe something that might be a little bit more meaningful and something that's a little bit more kind of closer to real life than just therapy, right? Like going to the gym. Lots of people go to the gym. So, yeah, I could see where for you that, like, you probably had more of a connection just going and trying that.
Yeah, just being out, I guess, with other people. Because I was still trying to get used to that, even though like when my friends are around, my family is like, it's okay. But as I'm like there doing it myself, like it's like there's no help, then I really need to do it myself. And that kind of pushed me even more. I was like, okay, I gotta try. And then after a couple attempts, if it does happen, like, okay, hey, anyone around? So did that, discharged myself, finally got myself back into school. With the Department of Rehab, they helped me, because the whole college process was crazy because I missed the first month of the first couple weeks of school, and I was getting all these notices like, where are you? And you have no admissions, the whole like, I just had a bad record to start off with back at Cal State LA.
For a good reason, but
yeah, for a good reason.
I can see where they're like, what's going on?
But all that paperwork, it's just so much for me and my mom to handle. We're just like, that was like on the side, like, whatever, we'll deal with that when it gets there. So with Department of Rehab, I told them I was enrolled in Cal State LA. Like, why do you want to go so far? I'm like, I don't know. That was just what I got into. So I guess I'll go there. Like, you could go local. I was like, oh, okay, let's go local. Yeah, at that point, I was open to anything. So I went to community college and I did that for a bit, just to get enough G's to transfer over to any school. And at that point, I was still really passionate. I wanted to be a teacher. And then I saw that Cal State Fullerton had a good teaching program. And then I applied there. And at the time, I forgot that when I was supposed to go to Cal State LA, I also said yes to Fullerton. And I think, but before it was like, before it was fully digital, I was still enrolled in both. So that was like another issue. Like, you're supposed to be here like 3-4 years ago. What happened? I'm like, oh, so this is what happened. I'm like, okay. So I got in. As I was in the teaching program, within the first year, I was like, this isn't for me. And I was just like, dang, I just want to finish school doing something. And I was looking around for other majors, and I found health sciences. And I was like, well, this will help me learn more about myself. And I was so I switched my major to health sciences.
For a selfish reason.
Yeah. So a lot of the things I've been taking or doing, it is selfish, but it's just trying to find out more about my body.
I think just because like a lot of people, they get into healthcare because it's like I want to help other people. And I think you've always had that. You've always wanted to help other people, but then you also kind of had this desire to also kind of help yourself and understand your body and everything that you had been through.
Yes. That was because if I could understand what's happening with me, I felt like it was easy to understand from their point of view. Because mm-hmm. everything that came up, I was like, yeah, and like, I always get that when I was meeting new friends, like, oh, I was in a car accident too. Because they didn't, by that point, I was like pretty mobile and getting around. They didn't really see that I had a disability or I had walk funky. They're like, oh, I was in a car accident too. You know, like, it was just, and then it's like not comparable by any, I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool. And then I start walking and like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I'm like, no, it's cool. Like, I still know your pain of what you've gone through. It doesn't, there's, you know, even the degrees are different. It doesn't mean that you didn't go through your own journey. So I was doing health sciences, and then I was like, oh, cool. I still want to help out people. So I found the health education track. And that was when I was still volunteering a lot at Rancho. And I was like, oh, maybe there's something here. Like, as a volunteer, I'm looking at how things go. Like, I'll just probably just do my hours here because I needed to get a certain number of hours. And I was like, as I was doing it, I start off as a volunteer and helping out PT. And I was like, oh, yeah, I remember PT was fun back in the day. And as I was doing it, I was like, oh, this is kind of boring. And I would see like OT on the other side of the room, like, oh, that looks fun. And at that point, I was just volunteering. So, yeah, go check it out. Seeing it from the outside, I was like, this is very fun. I think I can get into it.
Now, okay, so at this moment, you're like, OT looks really cool. But you had a lot of OT yourself. So did you ever think, like in a million years, as you were going through your own OT sessions, that this would be something you'd be doing now?
No, I didn't see it like that. But it's funny, my mom did. She always felt like, because I always wanted to teach, and she kind of knew ahead of time like where I was headed. She's like, oh yeah, yeah. And like I told her about, like, oh yeah, today I was at PT and then check the OT. She's like, oh really? Okay. That's cool. It's as if she found out, like, she's like, oh, you finally figured it out, huh? That's what you wanted.
She was just waiting for you to catch on.
Yeah. Mothers know. So as I was volunteering more, just I started asking more information about it, like out, just like the schooling and figuring out why. Like, I just kept asking why. I was like, how come you did this here? And they would explain it. Like, oh, and it also, so like I was being selfish, like, oh, I get it, why you're doing it to me now. Okay. Like that patient client thing was out the window now as a volunteer, but I was like, oh, I get it. Everything started to click. So that was going on. Like, it was also at that moment where I saw my friends, which is kind of dumb. Like, now I look at it, it's all my friends are graduating. They're finding out jobs, at least the ones that are my age. And so I was like, okay, I can't change my major now. I can't change everything that I'm doing now. I'm just going to finish out with my bachelor's. And then we'll figure out from there. And I was figuring out, I was like, oh, what's the fastest way for me to become a therapist? So that's where I looked at, I saw both OT and then OTA program. And I was like, well, I just want to get back to life. Like, I feel like the schooling, everything was just, it's like a placeholder for me to do my next step. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do a CODA program. And it's very like a lot about timing because it's usually a 2-year wait. But when I applied, I told them I'll be getting my bachelor's. It was at Santa Ana College. And I told them I'll have my bachelor's by program starts. Everything will be good. And they was like, okay, you'll be waiting the 2 years, which was fine because I gave myself a little bit of room. So I would technically be waiting only about a year and a half from after I graduated. And then got in. And I got in actually earlier. So I started everything. So it was a year and a half wait. I only waited a half a year to start my programs.
Wow.
So it was, everything was great. I was like, okay, cool. And as I'm learning there, like, oh, that's where the whole OT, OTA, like the whole, they kind of broke it down. And for me, it was kind of easy because my mindset was already set in that OT life already. Because for me, I feel, I always say it's like OT or PT, both of them, it's not just a thing that I say I do. It's like my life every day where morning ADLs, like keeping myself healthy. It's so much planning on a daily basis that, I mean, we all do it, but I just have to, like, I have to think about it even more because everything affects it.
I mean, even before school, you really had been eating breathing and sleeping occupational mm-hmm. therapy throughout yeah. your recovery and, I mean, everything that you went through. So, like, when you were in school, did all the dots just start connecting? Where you were like, oh my goodness, like, I went through this. This all is starting to make sense here.
Yes. I think because of my experience, I was very far ahead of everybody else where I wasn't the best student because I was like, oh, I got it. But even there's still like, you still got to pass these tests where I didn't have to study too much because I could just break down what I did and like what correlated. So, and then a lot of like things like the activities that we did, like the stitching stuff, like the meal prepping, putting yourself in the wheelchair. I was like, oh, I do that. So my teacher just like, just give me your perspective on it. So it was kind of nice on that point.
Yeah. We had these days where you would be given some sort of like disability, whether mm-hmm. it was like you lost your vision or you like only had use of one arm or something like that. You didn't have to do that because you had already gone through like a range of different things that you had done.
Mm-hmm. And even at that point, I chose to use myself as a resource for a class. So whenever there was transfer training, range of motion, looking at the tone, spasticity, I would just volunteer like, here, use my body. It's fine. Don't be shy. And I think that's the biggest part of the program is like, if it's your first time, people are just so shy to do it. And it's easy to do it with another person that's abled body or like everything, the system's intact. But when there's someone like me, it's like, oh. It was selfish because I could like, oh, I get it. Why? But now I can see it from the client side of why you should lift like this. And I do it myself and like, oh, I see it.
So you make it through the OTA program mm-hmm. and you start practicing. And how would you say now, kind of reflecting back on the accident, reflecting back on all your therapy, reflecting back on OTA school and kind of everything that you learned, everything that you experienced, how would you say that all of this has influenced who you are as a practitioner today?
That's kind of tough. I feel like as a practitioner, my experience made me stronger in my client skills because physically I'm not up to par, I guess, but my life skills have given me that confidence boost. To treat, because that's my biggest thing going through school or even when I'm treating is always like the physical part is coming, especially now that there's wear and tear going on. I think this is my fifth year. Wow. It's been 5 years since I've been treating and I see it. Then now I'm like, oh, I got to work smarter. Like, let's use what I've learned to treat better rather than always having to be physical. And I think that's what impacted me most throughout everything because I've always wanted to help people since I was younger and sharing wasn't a big deal. But the funny thing is I don't like being the focus. I'm always like in the background. So I kind of just work around. I try not to have the spotlight. So my experience is definitely my X factor in my treatments or even when I'm even applying for jobs because it's never been very easy for me, I guess, throughout after the accident where I remained flexible and resilient in a way where like, okay, just prepare for things. Because even when I graduated, it was so hard to find a job. Like resume, I did all the right things. But as soon as I show up to places, I could see people like their facial reactions. And I was like, oh, great. So it actually took me a while to find a job. And I was like, but you guys are OTs. You guys should like, you're the ones that should understand.
Do you think that they were worried that you wouldn't be able to uphold all of the responsibilities that you'd have to do in that role, or just kind of like their own expectations of you that they were just worried that like maybe you couldn't cut it?
I think it was a combination of both because especially as a new grad, it's hard. And then I have a disability. I would always say in interviews, like, I know my limits. I know when to ask for help. And that could have been a lot, I guess, asking when I was interviewing. So I just kind of, the first couple jobs were just like ones that said yes. So I took a per diem job. I'm still at that per diem job. And I think that got me to learn the whole system really quickly.
And that's in the schools, right?
No, that was with a registry.
Oh, got it. Okay.
So that was my first job. And that was no mentorship, nothing. It was just like, all right, you're working. Go do it. I'm like, uh-oh. I think from the first day I started, I was like, huh, how could I use what I know rather than being physical. Because the first thing I saw when I looked around, a lot of other therapists were very physical. And I was like, I don't want to do that. I can't last here all day in this like 8-hour shift if I did that. So I had to like make my own style treatment. Mm-hmm. And then...
Okay, so I'm going to interrupt you here because I have a story. And we haven't talked about how you and I know each other. You were actually a student of mine. And I have a story, and I kid you not, like this one moment during your time as a student with me, I will always remember it. And we were working with a kiddo that had some pretty significant physical limitations, and one that I had been working with for a while. I know you know who I'm talking about. And I remember it was like one of the very first times that you were starting to like lead the session. And this was a kiddo, like, I'm completely physical. Like, there's so much physical work that I'm doing with this kid in moving the kid and getting him to do this and helping and transitioning and all this kind of stuff. And I remember you wanted to either get him on the swing or off the swing or climb onto something. And you were like, I got this. And in my head, I remember sitting there being like, I don't know how he's going to do this. Because if it was me, I would have gone and I would have picked the kid up and moved him around. But I was like, he said he's got this. Like, I'm going to watch. And I sat back and you demonstrated to the kid how you would do it. And then the kid just copied you. And I was like, oh my goodness. Like, if I hadn't have watched you go through that, I would have given way more support. You know, I would have jumped in and did so much of the work for this kid that he didn't need. And I think just as you're kind of talking about this whole physical aspect, it doesn't have to always be physical and lifting and moving and doing all this kind of stuff. It can really be demonstrating. It can be talking it through. It can be educating in other ways. And I had to tell you that story because it honestly, it just completely, to this day, it stands out that even if it's not the way that I would have done it originally, I learned so much from you in that instant.
That's the first time. That's the first time I know about that.
I know. I didn't tell you. But I did. I learned a lot about me and kind of my go-tos of how I treat. And then I learned so much about the client. It's hard for me to even put it in words, but I did. I learned so much from that interaction. And I could tell that you were proud of yourself because you got the kid to accomplish what he needed to do. And the kid was like, I did that all by myself. And so then the kid's excited. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this was just a beautiful thing that had happened.
I learned so much from my placement there. I wasn't originally supposed to be at that site with you because something happened with my paperwork. I was supposed to be at LAUSD and something happened. And being with you guys was my last ditch effort or I wasn't going to graduate in time.
It's interesting how much you keep bringing up time and how things happened because of timing.
Timing has been a big part of everything I've been doing because it has to come very organically. Even when I try to rush the timeline, things wouldn't work out. And then I kind of wait and relax. I'm like, oh, it's kind of blooming self. Like things happen on its own, but like the way it's supposed to happen. It's really weird. I'm really big on timing.
Yeah, I think that rings so true. To therapy. I mean, life in general, mm-hmm. But therapy, where sometimes you're going to be talking to a patient or talking to a client or a caregiver or something like that. And it's like, okay, we need this to happen. We have to do this and this and whatever. And maybe they're not ready to hear that. Or maybe mm-hmm. It's not the right time. There was a lack of understanding. There was a miscommunication. Like something was going on that made it where it wasn't the right time. But then a week later or a month later or a year later, something clicks and then all of a sudden it makes sense.
Yes. Yes. Especially, that was a really good point you brought up because sometimes it's just they're not ready for it. And if you push it, it's just more resistance that you don't need. Therapy, that whole like interaction is hard enough without that fight. We're on the same team. That was the biggest part. And that's what I learned so much from my fieldwork with you guys is how you guys would react and with the kid. Even when I was doing my interview for school-based, I had to break down and think about all the stuff that happened when I was my time with you guys. And that's where like my second job came in. And like, so that's when I started my whole school-based. Then I just fell in love with school-based, having summers off, having winter breaks. And it was just less torture on my body.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like in every kind of practice area, like there's pros and cons about how it affects your body, how it affects your mind, how it affects you in general. And oh yeah, I'm constantly like always jealous about all my friends that are in school based that have the hours that, you know, they tend to be done a little bit earlier in the day and then they get summers off. And oh yeah, totally jealous over here.
So when I got those first two jobs, they were both part-time. I think that's where everything started to take off more. Now that people gave me a chance and my resume showed and I knew the right answers, I guess, at that point now to say, like, I know what to do with the kid or with the client when this so-and-so happens, that it just kind of kept going. And after the first, I guess, 6 months of it, I ended up with the full-time and I was just working nonstop. And it kind of took a toll on me. So that's like, so currently I'm back to part-time just because my body, and I was just, it's more of a self-care thing. As I was doing it, I was like, I can't keep doing this forever. So that's when I started taking different courses, get to different certifications to see where I could use my knowledge best at, because that's what's always been my it factor. And so I've been taking different classes because during my stint in the rehab, it was always seeing the patient, seeing the client after they're hurt, rehab after they're hurt. And then when I look back at it, there was things that they could have done to prevent it. So a lot of prevention. So with like the elderly clients, a lot of it was falling. And I'm like looking like, oh, why? And I was like, okay, like their homes wasn't set up best for their needs. I went to OTEC 1 year and there was I connected with someone that linked me to they're called a living in place. So I took the certification class, which was nice because the program was created by an OT and a home builder. So they've seen a lot of the things that could happen or like the setups. They have really great knowledge. I actually collaborated with them and did a presentation for OTEC years ago. So I did that and I was like, okay, cool. All right. So what's the next step? So now we set them up nicely. So the prevention part was kind of there. So I had the knowledge on that. So I'm going, doing rehab. It was also, it's always pain. So I dived deeper into like the pain science of things. I think that around that time, kinesio taping got really big. So I was like, huh, it's working. It's working somehow. I don't know how it's working. I was kind of playing around with it myself with friends because they bought it. So I trained. And then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to figure it out because it's working on some people. And so I took the classes. I took the rock tape classes for the kinesio taping. And then they opened up a whole other like rabbit hole of just pain, movement, and a lot of knowledge from like the PT side of things. But their whole curriculum is very, doesn't matter, PT, OT, anything, we're here on the same team. And that kind of opened my way into a lot of things that I'm doing now with pain. So I got certified in taping and soft tissue. So I was doing a little bit of that for my nursing facility registry job. And while I was with kids, I was always the one that my coworkers referred to for any type of tech needs. If it was an app, something wrong with the computer, and I was like, you know what? Let's see like what AT things are out there. Because I've always heard of Resna. And I was like, is this like, there has to be something more closer that I could attend. And actually, that's when I found the Cal State Northridge's Assistive Technology Certification Program. So I took their course. And during taking their course, I was like, wow, AT isn't just a Resna thing. And that kind of just opened doors. So all these like courses I've been taking just kept opening doors in my mind of like, whoa, if we collaborate with people outside of just the healthcare, that we could do a lot more.
It's interesting, like as you're talking, I'm drawing this whole parallel from your recovery and then what you were just talking about. So going back to your recovery where you were like, it started with the pain, then it moved to temperature, then it started with the toe, and like kept building upon starting small and then building onto the next thing that would kind of come your way. And as you were just talking, it's the exact same thing. Like you started with that prevention because you were noticing that there was a gap that was happening with all these things. And then that led into pain and that led into the movement and the kinesio tape. And yeah, just like I got this whole parallel from both of those stories.
Thank you. I think it needs someone to keep seeing from the outside in because I wouldn't have gotten that parallel. I'm just like, oh, I'm just so forward. Like I keep going forward that it's kind of nice to like look back.
Right. but I feel like this is what you do for your clients and for your patients, because you have this experience of everything that you've gone through and then everything that you've learned, like, since then, with all of these courses and educations and certifications, that you are able to kind of take all of this knowledge and personal experience as well as professional experience and then apply it to your client and help them through whatever difficulty, whatever challenge that they are facing in that moment.
Totally. And at this point, I'm like, my clients are even, I don't feel like I even do OT in the sense of traditional OT, because it's just trying to figure out what they need to do best. If it's something with AT, something with pain, or something with like home, or it's just outside of what we know as, or what we were, I guess, taught in school. And that kind of just kind of brought me up to like currently. So I've been doing ergonomics with gamers, like video gamers, since it's really big right now. I have a couple of friends that are doing it, like producers, and it's all preventative things. So I have a cash-based clientele where I set them up where they came to me with pain, and I try to figure out like what's going on. And I was like, oh, it was because of XYZ. It could have been something with the ergonomics or the way they set up their room. And then it kind of blossomed into that right now, just finding where I fit in. But it's weird because I've never fit into one thing, like one category. So even now, like when I got asked to do the podcast, I am Team OT, but I don't know if I'm doing OT in the traditional sense of, or at least where our education was, because I'm so like I feel so outside of it now. I don't know if that makes sense.
It does. It does. And I'm going to call you out for it, because I can sense kind of a hesitancy. And kind of this, like, I don't know if I quite fit in. I don't know if I'm even really doing OT. And I want to stop you right there and say that everything that you're doing is OT. And even though it's not the traditional sense, I think in today's society, we need to get out of that traditional OT. I feel like occupational therapy has been kind of locked in this box and kind of compartmentalized and brushed aside into very specific things that people think consists of OT. And OT is so much more than that. There's so much more to our profession and what we can do. And this is exactly why I wanted to bring you on the podcast, to share with other people that you don't have to do the quote unquote traditional route of OT. You can do almost anything and pertain it to OT, utilize the skills and the knowledge that you were taught in school and also learned on the job, and apply it into any situation in order to have this positive outcome for whoever it is, whatever population that you're working with. Because even in just that example that you said of the gamers, they were coming to you because of pain. Well, what do they want to be doing? They want to engage in their occupation of video games. But now, because of ergonomics, or maybe it's a physical thing that's going on, or just repetitive use, they're experiencing pain in some sense of the way, and it is impacting the way that they engage in that occupation. And that right there is OT.
Yes. Just always learning. Thank you. Thank you, Sarah. Okay.
You're welcome.
I do OT. It's just, I'm kind of paving. It's weird because I'm not like, it's very unknown the path I'm taking. So like, there's no one to kind of base it off. Like, oh, they did it this way. Okay. It's kind of following, which I guess that's just been my life. My whole rehab process till now, I'm just kind of going at my own pace. Cause now thinking about it, like, okay, it is still OT. And I advocate for OT all the time, even with my collective. So I have a collective of healthcare people, of PTs, masseuses, chiros, athletic trainers, yogis. I have a lot of friends that are dancers, and they're coming to me for pain. And I was just like, what's going on? So I was taking care of them in dancers, but there's only so many people I could treat. And it was bigger than just treatment. It was just education that I couldn't handle them all. So my roommate, he's an AT, athletic trainer. And like we were kind of on the same path of, we wanted to take care of our friends. They're dancers, and like, you know, let's team up together. And with all the classes, with a lot of the rock tape stuff I was taking, it was very like, we're all on the same team. And that's like kind of how our collective grew. It's called Offset Med. So we're doing workshops. We do training, recovery, therapy, I guess, quote unquote. And then we man events for hip hop. So doing education on that end. So that's currently where I'm putting a lot of energy into. Because now I have a community of people. And that was the biggest thing to find, that we can't do it ourselves. And at the same time, making sure they know what I do because I know what they do. So that's been like one aspect. And then with the gaming stuff, I'm using it. It's now, it was about using what I know and then finding the community that I fit into where I can help everybody out. Because that was the biggest thing. I just want to help people out.
And once again, here I am drawing another parallel with the story here. Because earlier when you were talking about your recovery, you had mentioned the importance of your support system and your friends and your family and how beneficial that was in aiding kind of your recovery. And now, once again, you're talking about this community. You're talking about collaborating with others and helping each other out and being on the same team. And really, it's not just OT. It's not just PT. It's not just athletic trainers. It's all of us that can work together to accomplish a goal for maybe one person or a group of people, a team, whatever that goal is. And just, I love the fact that you brought up that community and connection with others to ultimately help them and push them forward and help them meet their goals.
Yeah, I think that was the biggest, that's the biggest like push that I'm doing right now, of using what I know to collaborate others. Especially, I feel like a lot more OTs kind of should collaborate outside and get out of their comfort zone, because there's a lot of things, like you said, OT is everywhere. They just don't know it yet at times. But then when something comes up, like I've been really close with the people at Zappos Adaptive. Uh-huh. That everything about it screamed OT, but the person that came up with it was just a really good customer service rep that wanted to find the right product for that client that called in. I feel like that came out organically, but if we actually did more collaborating outside just the healthcare space, that these things could have been accelerated. And then and it would just help out everybody. And I've been trying to advocate that to like, go out, talk to companies, see where your worth is outside of it. We use our information and just go out there.
Make that connection, because you never know, you might not be able to use it, but somebody might come to you later, a client or maybe a student or a colleague or something that's like, hey, I would love to get into this realm or I'd love to learn more about this topic. And you're like, oh, I met somebody 5 years ago that does that. Let me see if I can reach out to them and connect you guys. OT is a small world, but we need to utilize the other professionals and the other people out there to just add to our knowledge base, add to our tool belt, and really work together to continue to kind of help the greater good.
Yes, yes. So much yes in that.
So you had mentioned that you have a blog, but I'm curious kind of how that blog came about and why you decided to do it.
So during my stay at Rancho, social media wasn't around yet. And I connected really well because I was in there for a good amount of time with the with other patients. And so through that, I asked the therapist, like, is there a way I could still see them? And I was a founding member and collaborated with the therapist to create a adolescent support group for people with spinal cord injuries and other injuries. So I've been a part of that since 2004. Now, I am not an adolescent anymore, but I am still welcome into the group back at Rancho. And then as I was doing that, that's when like things started picking up with Facebook, Instagram, because I get to see stories of everyday people and like, well, how they're doing now. So now there's been years of kids going in and out of the support group. And the biggest thing is we're here when you need us. And if you don't, it's fine. Like, we want you to go and be independent, do whatever you wanted to do. So as I was doing that, like, I wanted to share my friends' stories that have gone through the program and people I started meeting out in the community. Because after you get like licensed or your brain opens up into that therapy world, you start seeing more people with like disabilities, or there's like a wheelchair there, there's a power chair there. Like, you kind of start noticing things, where I started noticing way more often. I would just ask him, like, oh yeah, because I just wanted to know what they're up to and just see. And it was kind of nice that, especially like in a crowded field, like I could spot a person with like the cane or the power chair, and we could kind of band together. Like it gets too hectic sometimes. And as I started finding all these like amazing stories of just people just living their life. Because usually the people that you see on media, it's very, oh, this person got hurt, or this person's like some Paralympian. This person's a CEO of a foundation. I was like, there's such a big gap of people in the middle that no one really hears about. So I started the blog one day at a time, and I just started showcasing people. They're really just come across in the community, because I started just being more active again, going around, hanging out with people, seeing other people. So this is a perfect chance for me to just share everything. So that was when I first started, like 2 years ago. And now the community has grown where there's plenty of events to go to. There's a lot of stories now, just normal people, which is great. So the blog, it started off with sharing stories. Now I'm just sharing articles and then sharing my experiences with things and tips and products. And at this point, I'll still keep doing that, but I don't know where I'll go next, because now the community has grown so big with the utilization of social media that I don't know if I'm still needed or I just... Because it's a lot of work.
Oh, yes. But I feel like you might not know where you're going next, but you're going to find the right spot.
Hopefully.
If I know anything about you, that it's going to happen.
Sooner or later, I hope so. I hope so.
Yeah, and I think all the stuff that you share on your blog, on your Instagram page, is, for me, it's so inspirational. Because I think there are a lot of stories that need to be shared that aren't typically shared. And I feel like the content that you're putting out there is the stuff that people need to see. It's everyday people living their lives, maybe that have faced some sort of life-altering, call it a disability or change or something that happened. But really, the thing that I love about what you share is you share the real person. And you share who that person is. And there's always this positivity that comes out of it. It's not like a pity party. It's just like, look at this person. They are crushing it at life. And it's so inspirational. I love everything that you've put out on the blog and on Instagram.
Thank you. It took me a while to figure out like the format I wanted.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, kind of going back to you saying like you feel like you've kind of paved your own way. When somebody has not done it before you, it's a scary path. You don't know where to go. You don't know how to get there. And you kind of have to go through it in order to figure it out. And yeah, like you literally just have to like put one foot in front of the other and like live day by day and just tackle it as it comes along, and all of a sudden you like look back and you're like, wow, I've come a really long way from where I was.
And yeah, I've been looking back a lot more lately just because I have the time and like kind of reflecting, so it's been nice. So this podcast has been really great to kind of, I get to say it out loud rather than just thinking it in my head all the time.
Well, I'm glad that you came on and shared your story. So if people want to learn more about you, they want to go check out your blog or Instagram, where will they find you on the internet?
So my blog is at onedayatatime365.org. And then you can contact me on Instagram at TEEJYLEE. And it should be the same for Facebook.
All right. Well, I'll make sure that I link to all of that in the show notes. So if anybody wants to see any of these things that TJ's up to, definitely check out his blog, check him out on Instagram. And I have one more question for you.
Okay.
One word to describe occupational therapy, what would it be?
Life. That's it. Life.
No hesitation.
Nope.
You were ready for that one.
I was ready for it.
And I think that has to be one of my favorite answers because, you know, the name of the podcast, my motto, yeah, all that good stuff. Well, TJ, this has been an honor to bring you on the show, have you share your story and kind of everything that you've gone through and all of the amazing work that you are up to these days. I can't wait to see your next step and where you're drawn to next. And you have such a bright future in this profession. And I know that you are going to continue to do amazing things within OT. So thank you again. And this really has been such a great, amazing time.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity. And you know, I'm going to update you on all the things that I do.
Hey, before you go, I just wanted to say thanks for listening to today's episode. If you want to further the discussion, go to our website, otforlife.com, and join our Facebook group. If you like us, here are three easy ways to let us know. One, share our podcast with a friend, colleague, or anyone interested in occupational therapy. Two, leave us a review on iTunes or anywhere this podcast is found. Three, subscribe to us so you don't miss out on any upcoming episodes. Thanks again. We'll catch you next time, OT for Lifers.
We'll figure it out. There's always something that needs to be tweaked, but
it's just like therapy in general. It starts sometimes. You just gotta be flexible, right?
Yeah, it's life. Not even just therapy. It's life.
Yeah,
you have to be flexible in.
Definitely life.
Completely. Well, we'll start 30 minutes late.
All right.
I think we'll just kind of start over because my first question that I was so excited to ask you just totally bombed. Take two. Ready? Okay. That's not the right word. What is it like? Gosh, what's it called? What would you say? No, that's not what I want to say. I'll cut this out.
My physicality of it, my physical. I don't know. Am I sounding a little? It's getting kind of all jumbled up.
That's okay. I'm like, if you want to start over, you can start over with that part. Third time's a charm. Whoa. And then of course now my mic decided to just there. Okay. Can you stay, Mike? Can you be happy? Influence, that's the word I'm looking for. I kept wanting to say impacted, and I'm like, that's the wrong word. Okay. Perfect. Like, okay. As you were talking, I'm like, I should have led you in with a better question because the way I asked it was like, huh? I'm totally at a loss for words. I don't know what to say.
And end, right?
And we're done.